welcome to another edition of the Orlando Magic Daily Podcast. This is a kind of a special episode. We're coming to you at the end of the Orlando Magic season, but we're not talking about this year's Orlando Magic. We're talking about one of the greatest Orlando Magic teams of all time. We just watched a documentary, This Magic Moment, on ESPN, ESPN's latest 30 for 30. I'm joined today by Orlando Magic Daily co-editor Brett Roberts. Brett, I know the end of that movie's a gut punch. I had seen it already. I went to the premiere last week that a couple of Magic people were invited to, that Magic staff was largely invited to, as well as some media. But it's still a gut punch the second time you see it. How you feeling? You doing okay?
I mean, it's hard, Phil. It's 2 hours of a heavy dose of our childhood and all the bitter disappointment welling right back up to the surface again. It made me look at some things again that, you know, I certainly spent enough years afterwards thinking about, but for ESPN to make a 30 for 30 documentary on it shows that, you know, this is a cult classic team, really.
Yeah, it really is. I wrote about this in kind of my preview earlier this week. It's really a team that resonates with the culture of basketball, and that's why it was really a perfect team for the 30 for 30. I mean, this was, if I'm not mistaken, it's probably one of the few teams on NBA 2K that did not win a championship, one of the classic teams that did not win a championship that's included on there. I think they were one of the first in that line. There's certainly more, a few others now. I mean, you'll
only
see
like a couple others that I even use that I can think of. That 93-94 Nuggets team and the 92-93. Yeah,
the Run TMC Warriors are on there. The 2001 Kings, you know, they're
Iverson Sixers.
Huh?
Iverson Sixers are on there.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, there's a lot of these great teams that you know aren't, you know, if you run a thread through NBA history, there are definitely certain teams that are the main story. You know, you can't tell NBA history without these teams. And the Magic aren't one. I mean, the line that ends the film is a perfect one from Nick Anderson. There are short stories and there are long stories. This is a short one.
Yeah.
The Magic aren't one of those teams, but what makes history so interesting and what makes fandom so interesting and experiencing the league so interesting are these side stories. Are these stories about the teams that could have been, that you know, should have been, that were interesting and quirky, but not necessarily won the games. And I'm sure one day they'll make a 30 for 30 about the 7 seconds or less Suns. I mean, they wrote a book about them, and it's one of the best basketball books probably written, or certainly one of the more interesting. You know, this was just a really interesting story, and it still holds a lot of national pull, which is, you know, why you get a documentary made about it, why it was one they wanted to make a documentary about. What about this story do you think still creates that pull?
I think the youth of the whole matter, you know, how young that team really was and how good it was so fast. You know, as I was watching it, I was a 14, 15, 16-year-old kid. And these are guys half a decade removed from me that are, roughly speaking, that are playing the NBA Finals, you know? So it was like, not only were the older fans able to, like, say, wow, look at this, but they were a very identifiable team for the youth of this country, I think, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and certainly coming at a time, and I don't think the film got into this a whole lot, and maybe they should have. The way the NBA was coming up at that point, Jordan had kind of set this level that, you know, NBA players are marketable. And Shaq and Penny were two of the first guys to really kind of ride on Jordan's coattails and become these marketing giants. And the fact that they were on the same team, and I did think the documentary got into this really, really, really well, was, you know, Shaq and Penny were these marketing giants. They were these two players that everyone wanted a piece of, that everyone wanted to be like. I mean, Shaq, as this big man, was this magnanimous personality, a guy that you know, instantly attracted people to him, could do it from Orlando. I mean, everyone, I think this was a comment I saw on Twitter a lot, and it was really fun watching this movie, you know, knowing what was going to come up so I could prepare some content for followers. But it's really fun watching the conversations going on while the movie was airing and people being like, oh man, what would this team be like with Twitter, with everyone talking about them? And like, they were a team everyone talked about even before social media. It may not have been instantaneous, but people were talking about this team, you know, everywhere around the nation. They were a national sensation.
Yeah. That social media thing's a real wrinkle into everything, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And we did get a crying Jordan Nick Anderson meme, and I was very disappointed in the person that did it, but I knew it was coming, and I said I would retweet it, and so I did.
I mean, any Jordan crying face, it can be used. It's going to be used. That's one of our new laws of the internet.
Yes. Yeah, it's almost like Godwin's law at this point. You know, you brought up what I thought was the most interesting takeaway that I had from the documentary is youth. I mean, I think when they first announced that they were going to do this story, I really thought of it, and you know, maybe you can, before we dive deep into this, I really thought that the story was just a basic tragedy, a team with a lot of potential, a lot of opportunity in front of them, and it just fell apart for, you know, a number of reasons, whether it was, you know, the same forces of fortune that created it also destroyed it. And I think it's, you know, hinted at in the film. You know, you get these two lottery picks, these two number one draft picks, and that propels you to the top. But then Michael Jordan comes back, and Michael Jordan's the, you know, greatest player of all time, yada, 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 yada. Then there's this quirk in free agency where there's no restricted free agency, the summer that Shaquille O'Neal happens to be a free agent. Or the Magic come in with a maybe not a full max offer, but certainly a competitive offer, what they think would be a competitive offer. And then Alonzo Mourning gets $100 million in a contract, and now their offer just looks silly. You know, Penny Hardaway with his knee injury, eventually just sapping him of everything that made him special. The way things built up and the way things collapsed just seemed to be a lot of fortune, a lot of, you know, chance, a lot of just bad management. And it just seemed like it was a tragedy on that sense. And just the basic storytelling is saying, this is just a tragic story of what could have been. And that was kind of the story I was expecting coming into this. You were 15 or 16. You were 15 and 16 when this happened. I was 5 and 6. You're 5 the Magic arrived. So I was 5 when the Magic made the playoffs for the first time. So I was 6 and 7. You know, so I'm about 10 years younger than you. I was 6 and 7. So I experienced this very differently than you did. So I'm curious. I told this story to a few people when I was at the viewing, and we had a little get together at a nearby bar after the premiere last week. And I was saying, you know, like, you know, Jeff Turner asked me, you know, how old were you when this happened? I was like, I was 6 or 7. Like, the only thing I really remember, I was at game one of the 1995 NBA Finals. My family have been season ticket holders, you know, since the beginning. So I've been going to games forever. But I remember being at game one of the 1995 NBA Finals. And the only thing I remember from that game and that experience was seeing them roll out a grand piano to play the national anthem. Everything else is gone. Like, I don't have, like, a, you know, memory.
Well, when Magic came into the NBA, I was 8 years old. So you were still younger than when day one kicked off for me, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I know I was at certain things that first year, but I have no memory of it. Like, during the Magic's 2009 finals run, and, you know, maybe if you all are lucky, I'll share this photo on Twitter. We'll see. I used my profile photo during the 09 finals run was of me and Otis Smith at the Magic's first practice, because Otis Smith was the GM at the time. And I am literally 1 year old, and he is holding me up. Like, it is just like the craziest thing in the world. Like, the last game at the Orlando Arena, you know, I went to Nick Anderson, and I had we took a photo of me and him holding a photo of me and him from that first practice. And we found Matt Gukas and did the same thing. Like, it was like my memory of those early years, like, I was learning a lot about the early years from this documentary and from other stories that I've read. So I'm curious, as someone who's maybe a little bit older, and how you experienced this, what kind of story were you expecting from this documentary?
Well, I mean, the whole thing just kind of flashed to me in a cartoon here, where Shaq leaves and Phil races up out of his little kid's bed and throws his stuffed doll against the wall. And
that I'm definitely screaming, happened.
I'm screaming obscenities out of my bedroom window. That's the chasm in age there.
Yes.
You know, and it is really funny because, like, our memories from a very young age are obviously very different. Like, my first Magic game, I remember the program better than the game. I must have really loved that Hoop magazine with Jack Sikma on the cover. I still have it. But nice. I remember the program better than the game, you know. So there's those little idiosyncrasies. But yeah, like as a teenager, well, the weirdest thing to me now is when I look back is that I got it then, and now it's like, man, you know, like did I really realize what slipped through my fingers as a Magic fan when that happened? I don't think I did. I don't think the whole gravity of it really sunk in at that moment when Shaq left. I immediately started looking at other rosters and saying, well, hey, let's go get Felton Spencer on the radio. We went and got Felton Spencer, like, days afterwards. He never played a game for the Magic. But, you know, like, I don't think I realized what disappeared and what went away from a potential NBA legacy when Shaq left. You know, I really did not, at that time, get it, I don't think.
Yeah,
it was weird because most of the adults in the org, you know, the adult fan base was furious. They booed Shaq. But I'm like, this guy wanted to be in LA all along. That was kind of how I looked at it, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because I think what I came to realize while I was watching this movie, and it really came to me while I was watching this movie, and you know, I think my memory of that time was, you know, this was just a fun thing to do. Like, I was the Magic guy in school. Like, for show and tell in first grade, I reviewed what happened to the Magic the previous week. That was my show and tell every single week for the entire school year.
Early Orlando Magic Daily Days.
Orlando Magic Daily Days. It was Orlando Magic Weekly at that point. Okay. I just remember it being that the arena was just rocking. It was just a fun time. You know, I don't think I even realized what I was watching to some extent. Like, I knew it was good. I knew the Magic were winning, and you just loved the pure joy of victory. And it definitely hurt when Shaq left. Like, even at 7 years old, you know that that probably means you're not competing for a championship anymore. And I was a Penny guy. Like, yeah. I wanted to be a big guard like him and all that. But, you know, I still felt like I had a healthy respect for Shaq. Like, I knew there was nothing without Shaq. And, you know, it just felt like the good times were gone and some of the innocence was gone after that. And you can't, you know, you don't know that. You don't know that when you're 7 years old, but you definitely feel it. And you know, I stuck with the team, obviously. A lot of other people abandoned them. And that frustrated me more than anything that people abandoned them after Shaq left. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is still our team, guys. Still the same pin. It's still the same pinstripe uniforms. It's still, you know, a lot of the same players. This isn't the time to give up on these guys. And I know that frustrated me more than anything. And being 7 years old, that's, you know, pretty big, you know, pretty big thing to try and figure out, I would think. But
I remember that for us at the time, the big next wave became, look at this guy in Daytona mainland named Vince Carter. He's pretty special too, huh?
And they had that,
like,
traffic too.
I was immediately thinking forward, like from the time it happened and onward, the river onwards, that I never really lamented the loss of that team. You know what I mean? I was firmly committed to remaining a Magic fan and moving forward and being as good as the team could be and thinking, hey, we still got Penny Hardaway, like you said, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there were definitely some hard times. You know, it took 12 years between the time the Magic got out of the first round again. And certainly it was a lot of hard times, but, and you know, the fan base, you know, I think the big lesson that I took from watching this film, and I realized this while I was watching the movie, that the big lesson of this story is not kind of the rise and fall and the tragedy of it. It's really about the folly of youth.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one weakness in the documentary, if there's one weakness in this Magic moment, which again, I think it was really, really well done. It told the story really well. And maybe this is a complaint coming from someone who knows these stories by heart. They're part of they're really part of Magic fan psyche. You know, I don't think we're ever going to get over losing Shaq. I joked on Twitter, and I've joked with a few people on this. I've noted this to a few people on this. If they were to make a This Magic Moment 2, they've got the material for it, because the franchise essentially had the same situation come up. They did everything the exact opposite way they did it with Shaq, and they still lost the big man. They still lost the guy. But
that was that's a nasty aside. Yeah,
it's a nasty aside, but it's unfortunately true. Like, there's no, still
reality. Yeah,
there's a lot of the lessons are still being learned from Shaq. And this franchise is still trying. It's separated itself from Shaq and gotten its own identity. But in very many ways, there's I don't want to lighten PTSD, but there's some post-traumatic stress disorder from this moment that happened to the franchise, and they're still recovering from it in some way. And again, I'm not minimizing PTSD. Like, I'm just using that because I can't think of any. I think of a better metaphor. But to me, the lesson was, you got a young guy in Shaq, a young guy in Penny, and a franchise that is only 6 or 7 years old, plus a fan base that's only 6 or 7 years old, and a city that has its first major sports team and has no experience with professional athletes before. And that's really the confluence that I saw occurring as I was watching the documentary. Success came so soon, so quickly, so fortuitously, that no one really knew how to handle it. Shaq admits in the movie that he left the Magic because of his ego, that he wanted to be the marquee guy, and that it hurt him when the Sentinel ran the poll saying he's not worth $121 million, or when the Sentinel ran a similar poll saying Penny was their favorite player. That hurt him. You know, Penny was a young guy, who was probably thinking he's invincible and can play through any injury. And, the one injury he couldn't play through is the one that probably ended his career in many ways. Rich DeVos had owned the team for 3 or 4 years when Shaq's free agency came up. And, the line in the movie was that DeVos wanted Shaq to want to be here. It wasn't enough that they keep him. It's he wanted him to be here. And that's a very naive thought. You've got to just spend the money to keep him and worry about the rest later. Fan base, with the poll, not realizing what they had, thinking, oh, success is easy. We just win the lottery again and we're back in business, or we can find another center. Felton Spencer is good enough to replace Shaq and keep us competitive. Like, all that naivety, and maybe I'm being naive and thinking Shaq's completely blameless and that Shaq didn't want to just go to LA anyway. I've heard plenty of stories that he was going to LA anyway, but I don't think the Magic helped themselves at all. In that argument. But to me, the story was really about youth doesn't realize what they have until it's gone, or youth, there's this youthful pride about, youth have pride. They don't know what they don't know sometimes. And that gets them into trouble. And if there's an overarching lesson that I glean from this Magic moment, it's that when you're young, and I'm relatively young, you're relatively young, no offense, but
I'm getting up there.
You're getting up there, but
useful even me.
But when you're young, you don't always realize the work that it takes to maintain success, and you don't always realize how good things are, and that ego doesn't matter. Petty differences don't matter when success is attainable. I mean, it's what Pat Riley calls the problem of more, and I think that hit the Magic hard in the 95-96 season. I think that really hit them hard and drove a wedge between Shaq and Penny and Shaq and the organization. And, it's just, you've got to kind of sometimes take a step back and realize what you have and be humble about it, be thankful for it, and to keep working to maintain it. instead of always, you know, reaching for more or getting your own. And, you know, then again, the lesson can sometimes be, it's okay to reach for more. You're young. There is a possibility for more opportunity. But when that great opportunity comes, you cannot squander it, because you never know when the rug's going to get pulled out from under you.
Right. There was a Smashing Pumpkins song that came out around the same time this all happened, and Billy Corgan says the line, "Youth is wasted on the young."
Mm-hmm.
And it really is so appropriate, and it extends far beyond just basketball, but it's like the time that people are most gifted in life, both mentally, physically, and everything. We don't have all the experience and wisdom to know what to do with it, you know? And I think we saw a little bit of with Shaq when he came for his Hall of Fame induction, and he started saying some of the lines we questioned the sincerity of. Maybe they were sincere, you know, because when you're given the retroscope of looking 20 years back at something that you did at a time before you were a fully fledged mature adult, I mean, Shaq and Penny, they look like two old men reminiscing about being when they were kids, sitting in those chairs at the end of the documentary, you know. And I'm getting up there with them, you know, and you look back at things you could do then and you say, man, if I could have only had the mind I have now with the gifts I had then. And it doesn't just apply to basketball. It applies to tons of things in life. That is the real walk away story from this all, really, more than just a tragic team gone wrong, like you said.
Yeah. And again, I think the documentary tells the story really, really well. No offense to the great job that Aaron Layden and Gentry Kirby did, and I think they did a really good job. You know, it's not an all-time great 30 for 30. It's a good one. It's firmly comfortably in there. It's not, you know, kind of the hokey MLB production directed 4 Days in October, which I think is the worst 30 for 30. It's not King's Ransom that kind of scratched the surface on a really good topic that they could have really dug into. It certainly is an established, solid story. It brought back a lot of nostalgia, which I think is an important thing from a documentary. It told the story well, and it raised a lot of these issues. I mean, if I could have, you know, asked for one thing, I would have said pick a theme and build it around that theme, and tell the story through that theme, and that would really drive a lesson home to the audience. But at the same time, this, you know, like, we're Magic fans. We know these stories. I mean, I think on Twitter during the thing, I told additional stories that I know about the Magic team, about how the Magic were founded. You know, the one story that always stood out to me about how the team got named the Magic. It was the winner of a Sentinel poll. But the story that always stood out to me was, you know, Pat Williams brought his family down to Orlando for the first time to kind of see the city and see where they were going to potentially be living. And, you know, as his daughter was getting back on the plane to head back up to Philadelphia, she turned to her dad and said, "This place is magic." And that's kind of where they got the idea for the name Magic. And it didn't make the documentary. I'm sure Pat Williams told it. But that's a story that stuck out, that always stuck out to me about, you know, this team and why this city got chosen essentially to have an NBA team, because the Orlando was nothing. You know, I mean, you look at Orlando now, and even Orlando now compared to Orlando when Shaq was here, you know, this city has grown up a lot. You know, both, not just talking about building the Amway Center, you know, this city's grown up a lot in the way downtown's structured, the way industry has moved into the city. The medical research industry is huge in this city now. There's a huge tech startup industry in the downtown Orlando area. There's, you know, Orlando City Soccer. We have a second major league sports franchise now. You know, events want to come thriving to Orlando. One. Huh? I'm sorry?
I said a thriving one at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
A thriving one.
And it was fun. It was funny watching some Orlando City fans following this Magic moment, because, you know, not all of them are Magic fans, but there are lessons for that franchise here too. And I don't think Orlando City or their fan base will repeat the mistakes that the Magic and the Magic fan base made in those heydays. I think it was, again, you learn from experience, and this city's learned from that experience. They, you know, wanted Dwight to stay. They showered him with love, and And, you know, when he spurned them, like, I've had people say, I think Dwight was worse than Shaq. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. Like, Shaq was pretty bad. And I was much older when Dwight left and, you know, covering the team by then. And I understood a lot of what was going on behind the scenes and what was, you know, kind of spurring Dwight to move on. And I don't think it was the same. I think Shaq kind of blindsided the Magic a little bit.
It was a shocker when Shaq left.
Yeah, it was
a lot of a while to brace ourselves for.
Yeah. And you know, but at the same time, though, I understand why fans are more hateful of Dwight than Shaq. I mean, Shaq was kind of pushed out the door in some ways, and Dwight got nothing but love, and he still, you know, turned them down. And you right. know, it nothing's worse. I mean, nothing's worse than being turned down by something or someone that you love. And you know, unfortunately, the Magic fans have had to experience that twice now with franchise-changing centers and seeing championship teams crumble pretty quickly and deteriorate pretty quickly.
When you're a sports fan for two decades and approaching three decades now in a couple years of a team, you're going to see the highs and you're going to see the lows, and there's going to be lots of them. But this was the highest the team got, notwithstanding that it got swept in the finals and the Magic did win one in 2009. This was the peak. The Magic had global popularity. And, you know, it's only many years afterwards that you see that kind of stuff just doesn't happen often, you know. And when you're a kid and that's part of your childhood, that's special, you know. Like I said to Shaq, I said it all in one line to him. I said, thank you for the memories. He gave us some great memories. So did Penny Hardaway. The whole team was a great memory. But it, like Nick Anderson said, it was the short story. It was a short, great memory. And on some level, I'm just inclined to take it at face value and have enjoyed those games. And remember when they used to post those little Superman signs up along the baseline after every dunk he threw? And all those little good memories, they're not going to go away. You know, I'll remember those another 20, 40 years from now.
Yeah. I think you said it well. It definitely was a really good memory. I think this is a debate that will rage on with Magic fans for a long time about who was the best team in Magic history. But as far as impact on the NBA, as far as just like recognition and impact culturally, no team will be greater than the Penny and Shaq Magic teams of 1995 and 1996. They were just on another level that this franchise has not seen and probably won't see for a very, very long time. And it was good to see the memories put up on screen. It was good to relive it. And it was tough to follow the crash again, but it is a necessary part of the story. You can't tell the story without it. It doesn't go on forever. It ends. It's rough. But it's part of who we are. I don't think we should ever run away from it.
No, you can't. It's part of the franchise's the face of the franchise and how it developed. And there's a lot of real sad things about it, you know? Like, aging isn't a beautiful thing. Look, John Gabriel's starting to have some kind of battle with Parkinson's. You know, and so all things are fleeting, and you know, it's just my father who watched all those games with me. He's no longer here to watch Magic games with me. You know, like, we just have to enjoy these things and these great teams and all these things in life while they're here, because they're not going to be forever. And Nick Anderson's career went south after missing those four free throws. You know, so it's a moment in time, and they captured it well. This Magic moment, it was a really Magic moment.
Yeah, it was. It was an incredible ride, for sure. Before, you know, we're gonna jump into a little bit about how the Magic season ended here before we sign off. Do you have any other thoughts about the documentary that you want to get in?
No, I told you before we got on air that the one thing I'd forgotten completely about, and I still can't even rack my mind for it, is that commercial where Shaq bumps the little Penny off the couch.
Yeah,
I don't remember that. That seems like it would have been a big rift in the pond, so to speak. But I don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
There's that.
It's I completely forgot about that too. I mean, I remember the Little Penny commercials. I remember the Shaq Gnosis shoes. Still mm-hmm. my favorite shoe design, the Shaq Gnosis. he wore them at WrestleMania a few weeks ago when he went into the ring with the Big Show and Kane. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. We might see Shaq at WrestleMania fighting the Big Show next year in Orlando. So we'll see. The only other thing I can think of is you just forget how good Shaq was when he was in Orlando. The LA Shaq and Orlando Shaq are very different players.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Shaq staying in Orlando. I wonder the biggest what if of Shaq's career to me is what if he, you know, kept himself in Orlando shape and became just this wrecking ball behemoth of athleticism and size. He was just unbelievable.
I think that's another thing. Like when we finally did get our version 0.2 of 2.0 was Shaq, and it was Dwight, even at his very peak, paled in comparison to our baby Shaq when we first had him in Orlando.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, Shaq would have wrecked Dwight. If you could,
offensively, you know, yeah. I still think Dwight was a better defender, but a lot of that was motivation, I think. Shaq's biggest, I mean, and this is not, I think they let Shaq skate by a little bit in the documentary. Like the Magic get blamed pretty hard. Magic fans get blamed pretty hard. Shaq, you know, admits his faults, but Shaq kind of skates by. Like he wanted to be a star. Like his ego was really that big, and he's, you know, it proved itself in LA. He didn't always put the work in. Like he could show up and dominate people. And you wonder what would have happened if he were as dominant defensively as he was offensively. Because I mean, Dwight's probably the best defender in Magic history. Like he changed games defensively. And I mean,
that's a whole other topic.
That's a whole other topic for another podcast.
Stan Van Gundy deserves a whole lot of credit mentioned.
Yes, he does. Yes,
so we'll skirt past that anyway.
Yeah. We'll save that for another podcast. But Magic fans, if you ever, before we move on to kind of wrapping up real quickly this season and talking a little bit about the playoffs, if you ever want to watch any clips from the old Orlando Magic teams, and I mean any clips, we have full games, literally full games of the mid-90s Orlando Magic. You go to the Orlando Magic Daily Video Vault. Just go to OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Go up to the menu tab. There should be a little button that says Video Vault. Click on that. We've collected as many YouTube videos as we can find. We tend to prefer older videos than the newer videos because there's just so many newer videos. But just about not every game, but many of the key games from the 1995 NBA Finals run, including Game 1 of the Eastern Conference semifinals against the Bulls, the Steel game, including Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, including, if you want, I don't know why you'd want to watch these, but if you want, the entire 1995 NBA Finals in its entirety is housed in one place on OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Visit the Orlando Magic Daily Video Vault. If you find videos that are not in there, or you want us to try and find some videos, not everything is on there. Not everything is on there. We're just kind of, the idea of the Video Vault is to take what's already on YouTube and kind of package it in one place for you, so you don't have to go fishing around YouTube for it. Like we put it there for you in one spot. If you find anything, or you want us to look for anything, you know, shoot me an email, omagicdaily@gmail.com, or tweet at me, and I'll take an honest look for it. I'll try and find it, and I'm always constantly trying to add things. I'm sorry?
You'll probably find all kinds of awesome stuff by accident along the way.
Yeah. And specially curated for you guys. I did this before the podcast. That's why I'm feeling a little happier than maybe Brett is after watching the documentary, after watching this Magic moment. I watched the final part, so the final 2 minutes of the Los Angeles Lakers versus the Orlando Magic from 1998, from March 1998. That would be Shaq's first game back when Nick Anderson hit a three and did the Merton Hanks dance as the Orlando Magic defeated the Los Angeles Lakers without Penny Hardaway. If you need to pick me up, go to the Orlando Magic Daily Video Vault. I link to it on Twitter as well, but go to the Orlando Magic Daily go to OrlandoMagicDaily.com, click on Video Vault, go to 1997-98 season, find the game against the Los Angeles Lakers, the Magic win by 2, and click on that, and you will enjoy yourself for 13 minutes at least, and make yourself feel just a little bit better.
Yeah.
Brett, we're recording this. It's now past midnight on the East Coast, but we're recording this on Thursday, the premiere date of this Magic moment. The Magic had their exit interviews today to conclude the 2016 season. They finished at 35-47. We don't want to dig in too deeply because, you know, I want to get people on their way. But what were your general impressions of this edition of the Orlando Magic as they head into this critical offseason?
Well, tractor beaming back here into the year 2016. It was an interesting year. You and I both pegged the team for somewhere between 32 and 35 wins. They got 35 wins, so expectation delivered. It was just, you know, as we said last podcast, the weird method about which it all came. Starting the season 19-13, looking like a, you know, not just a playoff team, but maybe a home court playoff team. And that didn't happen. So now it's kind of looking back and seeing, why did the wheels go off? Should they have ever been so firmly on to begin with, you would argue. And, you know, the whole thing is just now it's about trying to troubleshoot, because the roster is about to go under some major changes this summer. And before you change a roster, ideally you want to know what you're trying to fix. So there's a need for an interior defender. There's a need for some more outside shooting, especially after just giving Fry away. And, you know, this team has to go now for where it wanted to this season, next season, or Rob Hennigan may be onto his next job. You know, the Magic need to be in the playoffs next year. And there's enough talent on the roster now, and we know what we have in some parts, especially, I'm speaking of Aaron Gordon, that the Magic don't have any excuses on the board for next year to make the playoffs. They have to.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. There's certainly a lot of pressure to make the playoffs next year. This season was a strange one. Like you said, you know, I pegged them to win 35 games. I'm very happy that I got that one right. So I'm not like I sense with Magic fans, there's a lot of frustration and disappointment, and I think that's okay. Certainly, the players are frustrated and disappointment. The big kind of takeaway was they felt like they let a lot of opportunities slip by, and that's why they're going home. It wasn't anything anyone else did. It was their own inconsistencies that caught them this game, and they just couldn't figure out how to escape that. And so this was a very strange season in that sense. But it was also kind of the season we expected in many ways. I think the team learned a lot about the roster that they have, and hopefully can determine who they're moving forward with. I think there are still some questions about this core, to be frank. No star has emerged. They obviously traded Tobias Harris in a big deal, but it's still hard to figure out what direction they should move forward in. I think the important thing to do this summer is to firmly pick that direction and start building a team around that direction. It's not time to collect more assets. It's time to build a team, however you do that. And if something doesn't fit that vision anymore, it needs to be discarded or needs to be cashed in. And I think that's an important thing to learn and to figure out this year. And so in that sense, I think the year was somewhat of a success, or I wouldn't call this season a success, because I do think making the playoffs was a noble goal and something they needed to try and accomplish. But it certainly wasn't a bad season for me in my eyes. And so I'm not at all satisfied with how the Magic did this year. But I don't have that same level of frustration. It's more of a, okay, it's time as a general manager, it's time to get to work. It's time to, you know, not make wholesale changes, but make some changes, get, you know, tweak things a little bit to have this team take its next step forward. And so, you know, we'll see what they do in the coming months. It's obviously going to be a very interesting time. We'll have a lot on that coming up on OrlandoMagicDaily.com throughout the summer. Just because the season ends does not mean we are done. The next question I have for you, Brett, the playoffs start Saturday.
They start Saturday.
What team? I mean, I think aside from the obvious team, what team should Magic fans cheer for in the playoffs coming up? Who should we hitch our bandwagon to right now?
Well, I mean, I'm completely biased on this. This is the most biased question you ever could have asked me.
Oh boy!
But I'm saying the Boston Celtics. I want people to observe what Brad Stevens has done with a marginally talented roster whose best player is Isaiah Thomas. For all his faults and strengths, he's not exactly a superstar. And
he's
the Celtics are really tough. He is an all-star, and he deserved to be an all-star. And the Celtics are a really tough team that are greater than the sum of their parts. They're a joy to watch for me.
Yeah, I haven't picked who I think Magic fans should cheer for yet. I kind of want to say Portland and Detroit just for
Stan for
just
Detroit.
Just for Stan and Tobias and Mo Harkless.
Yeah.
I like Boston because I agree that's a model for the Magic to follow. You know, I'm a big Dirk guy. I like the Mavericks, but if I'm picking a team for the Magic to cheer for, to out and out cheer for this postseason, you know, I love what Toronto's built. I think that they have the best chance to dethrone the Cavs and really make a good story, you know, kind of be very similar to that 09 Magic team. No one believes they can do it. They haven't performed well in the playoffs. I'm still a little gun shy on them
I'm sorry? They're a very tough team.
They're a very talented team. They haven't won in the playoffs yet. So I'm a little gun shy with them. The Indiana series has me a little bit leery, but I still think they're going to be a good team to watch. I think they'll get to the Eastern Conference Finals this year, where the moment will be just a little bit too big for them. But you know, I know some Magic fans want DeMar DeRozan. I don't think he's leaving Toronto unless they lose in the first round. But I don't think he's leaving Toronto, and I don't think he's necessarily a guy the Magic are going to be after. But
you know,
they're just a good team for Magic fans to watch.
Okay, the Bulls missed the playoffs just like Orlando. But say the Bulls had not missed the playoffs and they slid in as the 8 seed and they faced Cleveland and got trounced really bad 4 games in a row. Would that have made it easier to snag Butler, seeing him leave on really bad terms?
I think if you're looking for the Bulls to do a complete rebuild, missing the playoffs is what you wanted.
Okay. All right, checks out then.
Yeah,
that's what I was wondering.
Before we close out here, is anyone going to beat the Warriors?
I mean, there's only one team that I give a chance to, but I said that before the season started. That was San Antonio.
Yeah, and I don't think San Antonio's going to beat the Warriors.
They need a couple more Kawhi Leonards on their team. One's not enough.
They need more than one. They don't need just Kawhi Leonards. They need a lot of other things. That Warriors team is just.
Yeah, it's a ridiculously good team, and there's.
They are. I'm not gonna.
I enjoyed Mamba Night last night, though. It turned into Mamba Night after I saw the Warriors.
It did.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna ask the next obvious question because that's a rabbit hole I don't care to go down because I think it's irrelevant as much as Twitter people want me to think it's relevant. So I won't go down there. Brett, it was good talking to you about the documentary. It was good to see the Magic back in the spotlight. It was good to hear those stories again. Good to have that story told, and it was just good memories, good times.
Yeah, it was a great period in my life. It was in your much younger life at that point, and you know, like I said, they can't take those memories away from us. We didn't get a title. Who knows how many years it may be until this franchise wins a title? So. For right now, we have two finals appearances to look and kind of reconstruct in our minds, but we don't have three banners hanging like the Miami Heat yet.
No, and let's not compare ourselves to that team down south. They seem to ruin everything for us. They're the secret villains of that whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of are. Like they won one with Shaq. That like didn't get mentioned in the film at
all.
Oh
my God.
But they won a title with Shaq.
I will put my cousins on blast here. You guys know who you are, Jacob and Adam. They both we went down to Miami for the 2006 finals. We got tickets to game four. I'm a big Dirk fan. I only wanted to buy two jerseys of non-Magic players. I got a Tim Duncan jersey and a Dirk Nowitzki jersey. Ironically, that I did have a time where I was straying a little bit. I did wear a Dirk Nowitzki jersey under my Tracy McGrady jersey one time to a Magic game because I was just Dallas was my Western Conference team. I wanted Mark Cuban to buy the Magic. But I wore my Dirk jersey to game four, the 2006 finals. I had my Magic fan appreciation shirt underneath it for when Daryl came in, which he did. I was very happy for Daryl. And then my cousins buy Shaq jerseys, and I'm looking at them, and I was like, you guys aren't Magic fans if you buy those Shaq jerseys, period.
And they bought them.
This was before we were ready to forgive Shaq.
Yeah, that's selling your soul to the devil. Yeah,
I told them that. I told them two things. One, you're not a Magic fan if you're buying a Heat jersey, and two, you're not a Magic fan if you're buying a Shaq jersey, especially with the Heat. So
I mean, did we forget that they had Shaq and Penny at the same time?
The Heat reminded us on Twitter. I gave them a shake in my damn head.
Yeah. So that rivalry still exists. It's not dead yet.
it's not an on-court rivalry. Let's put it that way. It needs to be, but it's not yet. The teams just have never been good at the same time.
It seems to be how it goes, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll close out. We'll close out here. This Magic moment, I'm sure it'll be airing numerous times. If you missed it on Thursday night, I'm sure it'll be airing numerous times on ESPN and the ESPN family of networks. Check your local listings for This Magic Moment. I'm sure it'll be available on iTunes pretty soon. I'm sure it'll be on Netflix when the next batch of movies come up on Netflix. So find it, watch it, be prepared to cry, be prepared to have a knot in your stomach, have some old wounds opened up, but enjoy the ride as well. It's well worth your watch. I highly suggest you see it. We had a pretty good discussion about what that story and what that team means to the city, to us. What the lessons of that story are. I think it's a really, really interesting story from a national perspective, not just from a Magic perspective. So make sure you watch it. Brett, do you have anything else?
No, we got a lot coming for you this offseason, everybody. You know, like, I don't know if you noticed last offseason here at Orlando Magic Daily, we didn't die down and just sit around for a few months. We have plenty coming, so...
Yes.
Keep checking the site. We're not about to just shut it down until the Magic start next year. That's not how it works.
No, that is not how it works. It the season never ends. The fun is really just beginning. We'll have some good content for you coming up here. I'll be cleaning out exit interview stuff for the next few weeks probably, in addition to some other things that are interesting that catch my eye and catch our staff's eyes. But for Orlando Magic Daily co-editor Brett Roberts, this has been Philip Rossman-Reich. You can follow Brett on Twitter at 33Trigger, 33Trigger. You can follow me on Twitter at OMagicDaily. Follow us on OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Check out the Video Vault for classic games. And go Magic, right?
Go Magic. We got some stuff coming.
Awesome. Alrighty. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next time here on the Orlando Magic Daily podcast.